You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. More than 10,000 people gathered in downtown Los Angeles this Saturday to protest a United States war with Iraq. It was the largest anti-war demonstration in L.A. since the Vietnam era. Pacifica station KPFK Los Angeles recorded the event and interviewed many of the protesters.
I think President Bush is at best a misinformed leader, and at worst, he's a goddamn idiot.
The media coverage is not good at all. We keep hearing the same thing over and over again. We need to go to war. We need to go to war. I'm waiting for them to say why. Give me a justifiable excuse why we need to go to war.
Not only the American peace movement, which is growing and which has had time, probably because of the Iraq's acceptance of the inspectors, that's given them a lot of time. And all every day that goes by is a disadvantage, I think, for the government, because this grows, world opposition grows. It becomes more difficult to wage a war. But that doesn't say it's not going to happen. It could happen overnight.
George Bush is the dictator of the United States. It's not our president.
Well, the corporations obviously have a big influence in why we're going to war. Obviously, their interests are the ones that are being protected in Iraq. It's not the people. It's not the Iraqis, for instance, because we could have cared less about them months ago. Obviously, this is an economic issue, and they're using this war on terrorism as a means to be able to attack different countries that don't agree or that adhere to our policies. I think that it's a shame that all this money is being sent to wage war when they're increasing the amount of money that it takes to go to a Cal State system, to a UC system, and they're making drastic budget cuts in our school districts, in our healthcare. So I think that they're using the money that we're giving in taxes in a very wrong way.
After the march, demonstrators gathered in front of the downtown federal building where activists spoke out against President Bush's drive towards war with Iraq. You'll hear Ron Kovic, a protester who was arrested at the School of the Americas, and actor Martin Sheen.
Thank you for coming today to one of the most powerful demonstrations against war since the Vietnam War. This is the beginning. This is the beginning of one of the most powerful movements in the history of the United States against war. This is a movement about stopping war. It is also a movement about democracy. We are going to take this country back for all the people. Never doubt for a moment who you are. You have watched this movement grow slowly over the last few weeks and months. As citizens have begun to recognize their courage, we all have a great deal of courage inside of us that we don't even realize. This is an extraordinary turning point in American history. You were born. This is your destiny. This is your destiny to be here at this moment, at this crucial turning point in American history. You are going to be a part of an extraordinary turning in the history of this country, away from war, away from brutality, away from exploitation, away from the wrongness and immorality of these wars. And we are going to build a more beautiful country. We are going to make a more beautiful world. They are not going to stop us. This is only the beginning. This is going to become a very powerful movement. I have spent 35 years in this wheelchair because of the Vietnam War. Next week, ironically, on the 20th of January, Dr. King's Day in this country, I will celebrate, ironically, my 35th year of being paralyzed and in a wheelchair because of Vietnam. I want my disability, I want my loss of my body in that war. I want that sacrifice and the sacrifice of all the thousands of Americans on that wall in Washington and all the millions of Vietnamese who died in that war. I want our sacrifices to stand for something of meaning. I want this country, I want to know that I gave my body, that I came back from that war. You know, my greatest service to my country is my service to the peace movement, not to the war. Do you know the greatest service? The greatest service we can render to this country, the most patriotic service, is to the service of peace, the service of nonviolence, the service of the people of this country, caring with compassion for the people of our country and the people of the world. We will resist this war. We will fill the streets of this country with millions of American citizens if the president persists in continuing this war and moving us into a war that can only bring us more violence here at home. We will put millions of people in the street. Mr. President, this is just the beginning. We have every intention of changing this country. Keep fighting, keep coming back, keep marching. Thank you so very much.
Father Bill O'Donnell is still in prison, and he'll be there for 6 months. I want Father Louis Vitale to tell you what's going on at Fort Benning.
I want to say about Fort Benning. I think you know the school of torture there that goes on, the School of the Americas. But I want to tell you what's going on in our prisons. I just got out yesterday, as Dolores said, from Nellis Prison Camp at Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. I was with 600 men. And we were trapped in the middle of an Air Force base. Right around us, the camp is located in the middle of the nuclear bunkers. All around us and underneath us were the bunkers that store nuclear weapons and the other weapons being used for Iraq. Every day, the stealth fighters, the B-2 bombers, the A-10s were taking off with bombs, practicing bombing runs for Iraq. I would lie there at night feeling trapped in this prison with all of these bombs being circulated around us and see the nuclear bombs going in and out, getting ready to go to Iraq, and feeling terribly powerless. When I called Martin Sheen, he said there was this rally today. I came yesterday, came straight over here because I felt there were powerless. But here's the power. So stop. Yes, yes. Let's stop building prisons and stop the war machine and feed the hungry of the world.
The acting president of the United States, Martin Sheen!
Thank you. Thank you. We need to be reminded that we can no longer afford to remain silent, because we have learned from history that silence becomes cowardice when occasion demands speaking out the truth and acting accordingly. And so we gather here today with a new hope and confidence in the old adage, if the people lead, the leaders will follow. We have a far different point of view of the world than our leadership. We have a far different vision of our place in the world and our responsibility to its people. We want to end our long and shameful silence here today, and in one strong, clear, and united voice say no to death and war and yes to life, so that we may be made worthy of the long-promised blessing reserved for the peacemakers. From this time forth, may all our thoughts, words, and deeds be a nonviolent response to violence or be worthless as we lift up the world and all its people to a place where the heart is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depths of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way into the dreary desert sands of dead habit, where the mind is led forward to ever-widening thought and action into that heaven of freedom, my Father. Let my country awake! Thank you.
There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, plowmen dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it is worth.
Dr. Miriam Miedjan has written extensively on issues of gender and violence, and she's the author of Boys Will Be Boys, Breaking the Link Between Masculinity and Violence. We spoke with her earlier about how that relates to the war, the impending war in Iraq.
As I see it, violence is all of one piece, whether it's a husband beating up on his wife or mugging, a murder, a mafia, men in government. I have a chapter in Boys Will Be Boys entitled Real Men, Wimps, and Our National Security, which focuses exclusively on our foreign policy and how what I call the masculine mystique, which includes values such as an extreme concern with dominance, competitiveness, hierarchy, violence, use of violence at the drop of a hat, lack of empathy, how these qualities which traditionally have defined masculinity, and probably the major embodiment of this in American culture is John Wayne. I think if you asked a lot of people who's the real man, it would come out as John Wayne.
Someone with those characteristics.
Someone with those characteristics.
How about now, George Bush?
Oh, yes. Well, George Bush, what was his response to 9/11? Wanted Osama bin Laden, wanted dead or alive,
yes.
Gunslinging a cowboy. And I have a lot of problems with this approach to our foreign policy in a nuclear age,
mm-hmm.
in an age of weapons that can, biological, chemical possibilities that could really wipe out all human beings, that could wipe out the species. We really need to move beyond this definition of masculinity. And let me just make it clear right away, I'm by no means saying that all men live by this definition of masculinity, or that all men are violent.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing I'm saying. What I'm saying is that this definition of masculinity influences and defines masculinity for a large proportion of men, but by no means all. Some of the leading anti-violence people in the world, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, have been men. So obviously this is not a universal statement about all men. It's a statement about some men and the concept of masculinity that guides them. And unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
Amongst our leaders
well.
today, That, you might say that definition rule.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also might say that the National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice, is acting in a very competitive and tendency to want to use violence at the drop of a hat, aggressive manner. So
Yes. This
John Wayne mentality, maybe we've got to come up with another figure, a character, a Jane Wayne or someone that is also of a female gender, but acting in the same macho sort of way.
Oh, absolutely. Margaret Thatcher is always the first one to come up when I, when I talk about this, and more recently, because let me just mention that my book just came out a month ago in a new 2002 edition. So since that has come out, I keep hearing Condoleezza Rice. Before, in earlier times, I kept hearing Margaret Thatcher.
And also Madeleine Albright as well.
Yes, too. I would say to a lesser degree, but yes. You know, my point is simply that a larger percentage of men than women adhere to this form of behavior. And that's just statistically so, whether it's criminal violence. For example, if you look at the FBI uniform crime statistics for the last 20, 30, 40 years, roughly 90% of homicides are committed by males. Even with an increase in female violence, something like 84% of violent crime is committed by males. Now, that still tells you that 16% is committed by females. And so, of course, we have Margaret Thatcher, we have Condoleezza Rice, we have plenty of women who fit this model, but we have more men.
Mm-hmm. But really, none of this is new. I mean, they've been saying boys will be boys for generations.
Oh, yes. I think what is new, or what I was trying to bring that was new with my book, was the question of how do we change the socialization of boys to decrease violence, and how do we go about changing this obsolete definition of violence, which was perhaps, fit or adequate during the early development of human beings, but really doesn't fit anymore in the 21st century, or didn't really fit in the 20th century, which left us with an extraordinary number of people and the hundreds of thousands dead in wars and political action. So it's really the question that I raise and try to answer in Boys Will Be Boys is, what can we do to change this, this concept of masculinity towards something which values the positive qualities of masculinity, such mm-hmm. as determination, action, a sense of adventure, courage. There are a lot of very positive qualities associated with masculinity. Let's keep those, but let's get rid of the, get into a fight at the drop of a hat, or go start a war at the drop of a hat, or, be obsessed with dominance. That doesn't fit.
Well, I'm wondering if it's possible to really change that definition. Maybe there should be more emphasis put on just developing a character, a type of character, whether it's male or female. I mean, those are traits that I think could be assigned to anybody: determination, activism, sense of adventure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like for, if I had daughters, I don't, I have four sons, but I would like for them to also have those type of characteristics, about them, and for that to be the model of who they want to be in life, as opposed to, fitting into some sort of gender prescribed role definition of what their character should be like. And also, over the years, there have been attempts to try and tweak this whole masculine definition of masculinity. I mean, we've had Real Men Don't Eat Quiche, but then we've had a lot of parenting of fathers being given time off to nurture their kids when they're born. And, I think there's been some progress, but how much of it are we really going to effectively be able to change? What are your suggestions?
Well, I have a whole series of recommendations, but let me say first that I fully agree with you. These qualities apply to women. The positive qualities should be encouraged in girls just as much as in boys, and I think one of the really positive results of the women's movement is that these qualities have been encouraged in girls much, much more than they were before, mm-hmm. with very positive results. Now, I agree with you also that there's been movement, there's been some change, mostly in the area of fathering. men today are much, or many men today are much more involved as fathers. There's been a significant difference in this area, and which I'm really thrilled about. When the first edition of Boys Will Be Boys came out in 1991, there, you hardly ever saw a man pushing a baby carriage or carrying a baby. Mm-hmm. Today, it's just a normal thing. If anything, when I go out in the street, I see more men pushing baby carriages these days than women.
Dr. Miriam Miedjian, author of Boys Will Be Boys, Breaking the Link Between Masculinity and Violence. We'll be back in a moment.
Rulers of the nations, as you fuss and fight over who owns this or that and who has the right to design, build, sell, and store and fire all the bombs and guns to defend your holy empire. There are children hungry, children sick and dying. There are mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers crying. They're only pawns in your play of power and corruption. Slowly starve them, your new weapon of mass destruction. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand? Is it for freedom or our comfort and convenience? Is it to profit for big business we pledge our allegiance? Are we prisoners in the land of the brave and the bold? Held by indifference, or hearts grown hard and cold. And prove to me, America, that you care. And prove to me, America, you're aware. Who's dying for your freedom in this land? Who pays the cost for the liberties you demand?
The Kurdish people are said to be the largest group of people without a country of their own. Some 25 million Kurds live on their ancestral lands that straddle eastern Turkey, northern Iraq, and parts of Armenia, Iran, and Syria. These Kurds are caught between a rock and a hard place, a civil war with a Turkish government that has claimed tens of thousands of lives and chemical warfare used against them by Saddam Hussein's Iraqi troops. But pressure from human rights activists has recently allowed the Turkish government to grant selected cultural freedoms for the Kurdish community. Prothop Chatterjee has this report.
Irak Kürdistan Yurtseverler Birliği lideri Celal Talabani, Türkiye ile işbirliği yapamayacaklarını söyledi.
Melike Irmak is the news anchor for the independent Gün Radio in the eastern Turkish city of Diyarbakir, the historic capital of the Kurdish people. She reads the international news headlines leading with the looming prospect of the war between the United States and Iraq. Her radio station is the only dedicated Kurdish radio station in Turkey, but despite the fact that almost all her listeners are Kurdish, she must read the news in the Turkish language, under laws that have attempted to force the minority Kurds to assimilate into the Turkish nation for many decades. Kurdish cannot be taught in schools, and government radio and TV stations are only allowed to use Kurdish for 10 minutes a day. In recent years, however, the government has relaxed the rules and allowed Gün Radio to play Kurdish music so long as the DJs only speak in Turkish. Irmak, who is the only female Kurdish DJ in Turkey, is normally deluged with requests for Kurdish songs all day long.
ilişkide neler yüklediyor? Komisyonlara ilişkin.
Radyo Gün. Ahmet kimlere? Teşekkürler, iyi günler.
Irmak says she has to make choices all the time on whether or not to play the songs requested by her audience for fear of government reprisals. For example, any reference to Abdullah Öcalan, the imprisoned leader of the Kurdish struggle for autonomy, may invite the wrath of the government authorities. Currently, some 3,000 songs are banned, and the government can choose to ban more songs whenever it wants.
For example, when we get new Kurdish music CDs at the radio station, I check to see if any of the lyrics include the words Kurdistan or Abdullah. If so, I definitely can't play that particular song.
Gun Radio is currently battling government-imposed fines of $18,000, which is roughly equal to the station's entire budget for 6 months, for playing songs that the government has retroactively chosen to ban. The success of Gun Radio has led others to experiment with their new cultural freedoms. In the past 2 years, 4 Kurdish cafes have opened in Diyarbakir, where live musicians play Kurdish music almost every night. This traditional Kurdish song, performed live at the Cafe Veya in central Diyarbakir, is an expression of many aspects of Kurdish culture. Veysi Çokgezer is the owner of the Cafe Veya.
This music is called Mirkut. It is about love and the problems of Eastern Turkey. Both Kurdish and Turkish people like this music. It is very rhythmic, and when people hear this music, they want to get up and dance in the traditional Kurdish way, which is called halay.
The Cafe Veya, like the Sanat Cafe, the Sin Cafe, and Rengin, are generally packed with listeners every single night of the week, who sing and dance along to the songs. Veysi Bolkal, the executive director of Gun Radio, says that these cafes were unheard of a couple of years ago. He believes that this means that the future of Kurdish culture is looking brighter.
Nowadays we can buy Kurdish CDs much more easily than in the past. And also there are many cafes that play live music. It's a first step, but this alone is not freedom. We have more demands. We would like to learn our mother tongue and learn our grammar. We can say it's 50% better than the past, but I think it will get better in the future.
But Melike Irmak is still skeptical. She says that the changes are simply cosmetic, to please European governments who have criticized Turkish government human rights abuses of the Kurdish minority, and the true change is yet to come.
I don't believe that anything has really changed for the future of Kurdish people. For example, we are not allowed to give our children Kurdish names. Hamid is a Kurdish name, but we cannot use it. Legal changes are one thing, but the mentality of the government has yet to change. People in our villages are still very frightened because they are still being watched by the soldiers.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Protheb Chatterjee in Diyarbakir, Eastern Turkey.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shaljian, Ingrid Drake, and Marcus Tyler Brown. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Larry Vinsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at pacificaarchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.